Good morning, everyone. I'm calling the Senate Committee on Judiciary to order at this time. And what we're going to do today is we have three bills for a public hearing. What I'm going to first, before we get into the public hearings, we have three other bills that are LCs at this point, that are drafts, that are being requested to be introduced as from LC into bills for the committee. And Anna, I guess let's go ahead and get these done since this is probably not going to take that long. If you can just give us a preview for the LC 576, LC 577, and LC 590.
These LCs were part of our list that we approved on December 11th, but they were either put in the wrong chamber or didn't have the paperwork done in the week, as we said, Mr. Chair. So we have them on the list to approve again and put them in the Senate.
All right. So I'm going to ask for a motion regarding those three LCs. And I think for the record, we'll go ahead and do all three at once. And if there's an objection on any three of those, which I don't expect, then we can break those out.
Mr. Chair, I move that the committee adopt LC 576, 577, and 590, and then I'll speak to the motion.
And we have a motion before us, and any discussion on the motion from Senator Borkus to introduce LC 576, 577, 590 as Judiciary Committee bills.
And Mr. Chair, it's just my understanding from counsel that these were in the interim committee and we're just catching up here. Is that correct, Mr. Chair?
That is correct. We had,
for those who had not followed us in the interim, we had over 140 plus bills that were introduced on one day. And let's just say these probably went in the wrong direction. They're back here under our purview, and they have been. The motion stands. Is there any other discussion?
Yep, Mr. Chair, if I didn't know there was 140, I might have done
this. Well, these are the real special ones. The other 137 probably weren't. So, but anyway, and the other thing for the record is that by introducing these as committee bills, this does not require any of our members to support them when they come, if they come before us, as for a public hearing and for a work session. So with that, there's no objection. The motion is adopted, and the three are now will be entered as committee bills. So at this point, what we're going to do is we're going to do three committee public hearings on three bills. We are not planning on moving any of them, so it's only public hearing. Because today is the day it is, which is January 20th, the inaugural day for our new president, many people would like to be able to participate as observing that. So what we're going to do is we're going to see if we can get through the public hearings before the 9 o'clock hour. So with that, we're going to go in order as it is. I'm going to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 241. And at this point, Council, if you'll give us an overview, and Mr. Wade, if you'll be so kind to come forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 241 authorizes use of forcible entry and wrongful detainer statutes for the process to enforce a purchaser's right to possession of property purchased at a trustee sale. As execution sales, trustee sales, and foreclosures to the list of those who may be subject to unlawful holders of possession, declares an emergency effective on passage. There is an amendment expected on this bill.
All right. And Mr. Wade, our practice is, thank you very much for giving us written material. The one thing I am going to ask you to not do is to read your material. We will do that. If you can summarize for us in short fashion, that would be wonderful.
Good morning, Chairman Dunsey, members of the committee. My name is Patrick Wade. I'm an attorney practicing in Eugene. I have approximately 24 or 25 years of experience in debtor-creditor relations. I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon State Bar on this bill presented by the debtor-creditor section of the bar to deal with transfers of possession of property after foreclosures and similar situations. I would like to mention at the outset that our committee has worked closely with the Landlord-Tenant Coalition group, and as a result of that, we do have some amendments to the bill which are attached at the end of my testimony today. They have been submitted to Legislative Council, but only recently, and I think that the Legislative Council has not yet had the opportunity to put those into the proper form for an amendment, but I'm adding them today so the committee does have what those proposed amendments will be.
And, Pat, my understanding also is that we're going to maybe have some other discussions, just making sure that other legislation that may be going through other committees is succinct with what we're attempting to do here. So we will, as I said, be moving forward. But I appreciate you pointing out that there are also some additional changes or modifications based on what has already been submitted.
The purpose behind this bill is to seek a greater degree of consistency in the application of statutes and common law in a situation where there is a transfer of title to property followed by a transfer of possession, such as in a foreclosure or a similar situation. Right now, under judicial foreclosures, under execution sales, and after strict foreclosures for land sale contracts, the only judicial remedy for obtaining possession of the property after those events is through the equitable remedy of a writ of assistance. There's quite a bit of variation in the way writs of assistance are handled throughout the state and the different courts. The goal of this bill is to make the rather well-known and easily understood forcible entry and detainer statute applicable also in those situations as it currently is applicable in the case of a non-judicial trust deed foreclosure or a forfeiture of a land sale contract. Sections 1 and 3 of the bill are there to clarify some problem areas that exist in the statutes. This is particularly in case of non-judicial foreclosure statutes under ORS 86-755 to make clear that the if the borrower under the trust deed remains in possession after the foreclosure, the person can be removed through the FED proceeding. Again, if there's a tenant or other person occupying the property, not the borrower who's in possession, that person must be given 30 days prior written notice before that person can be removed from the property through the FED proceeding. Also, we want to make clear that the FED proceeding cannot be commenced until the 10th day after the foreclosure sale, and also that if the 30-day period, which may be applicable to a tenant, has not expired, the FED proceeding cannot be commenced until after that end of that 30-day notice period. Finally, under the language of the amendment, not the original bill, but under the amendment, the 30-day notice will be effective 3 days after mailing to make the notice period consistent with other similar statutory and rule procedures, such as Oregon Rule of Civil Procedure 10, which allows an additional 3 days after a notice is mailed. Finally, we want to make clear, and this is in the Section 3 of the bill, that procedurally, FED matters brought under the situations contemplated by this bill will be handled in the courts in the same manner as a residential FED would be handled, subject to the same fee structure and the same timing and other procedural guidelines. But this bill would not make the Oregon Residential Landlord-Tenant Act substantively apply to these proceedings, as there is no landlord-tenant relationship between the parties. Also, we want to make clear that this bill is not intended to change the existing law on whether courts hearing FED matters have jurisdiction to entertain questions of title. With that, I recommend or urge the committee to forward this bill with a due pass recommendation, subject with the amendment that's being proposed.
All right, thank you, Mr. Wade. I'm going to open it up for questions, but again, I want to say that we'll probably have a second hearing on this, just because of the amendments that will be coming forward. And so, with that, first, Senator Whitsett.
Mr. Wade, could you convince the committee why this is an emergency?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Whitsett. The reason for this is that there's quite a division of practice and inconsistency throughout the state, and it was felt that the remedies here, the changes, should be made effective immediately.
These inconsistencies in practice, are these something that have occurred recently, or is this something that's been ongoing for a long time?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Whitsett. This is a problem, I think, that has been going on for some time, but I think we're seeing a greater variability with the current climate of additional foreclosures in the state.
Thank you, Mr. Wade.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Wade, you mentioned that under these provisions, a tenant will be given a 30-day notice and then be subject to FED proceeding. Do I understand that correctly?
Chair and Senator, could you repeat that?
You mentioned that a tenant, under these provisions, a tenant will get a 30-day notice and then be subject to the FED proceeding after the 30-day notice period. Is that, do I understand that correctly?
Yes, Mr. Chair and Senator Bonamici, I believe that's right. If there's a tenant occupying the property that's subject to a foreclosure, the tenant receives a notice, or must receive a notice at least 30 days before the FED can be commenced. So that in a typical situation where a property that's subject to foreclosure happens to be occupied not by the borrower but by a tenant of the borrower, then the law has required since 1989 that tenant be given at least 30 days notice prior to being subject to being removed through the FED process. Now, not in all circumstances, of course, will a purchaser at a foreclosure sale necessarily want to evict a tenant. It could be that the purchaser is buying the property for the purposes of having a rental, and in which case the person might be very happy to have a tenant in the property and would not seek to evict that tenant. On the other hand, a purchaser might have a different goal for acquiring that property and would want to have the tenant evicted. In either case, if the tenant is to be evicted, the law has required that a notice go out at least 30 days before the action is taken to evict that tenant. But the purpose of this bill, the changes proposed by this bill and the amendments thereto, are to make clear that that FED proceeding cannot be actually filed with the court until after the end of that 30-day period, on one hand. And then the other amendment, which I mentioned, is that the 30-day period actually will be a 33-day period to allow for the fact that the notice is sent by ordinary first-class mail instead of being personally served.
Thank you. Brief follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Very brief.
And is a tenant who has a lease treated the same as a month-to-month tenant under this bill?
Mr. Chair and Senator Bonamici, I believe that would be the case. The idea there is that if the occupant is occupying by virtue of a grant of some interest from the borrower, when the borrower no longer has an interest in the property, that property interest that the tenant has, whether it's a month-to-month or a long-term lease, is cut off under ordinary principles of real property law. And there would be no difference, and this bill does not address any difference between those two situations. If a tenant with a long-term lease, if the lease predates the security interest of the trustee, that would not be the case because the interest created in the trustee would be junior to that long-term lease.
Thank you.
All right. Any other questions? Mr. Wade, thank you very much. Is there anyone else who wanted to give any testimony at this time on Senate Bill 241? Not seeing anyone, I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on 241 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 240. Mr. Wade, why don't you go ahead and stay here. And Mr. I think it's Mr. Comstock, if you'll please come forward too, if you're going to be giving testimony. Not okay. And Council, you want to give us a
Mr. question? Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 240 limits Social Security numbers and driver's license numbers to the final four digits and judgment documents and liens, limits Social Security numbers to the last four digits in writs of garnishment, provides for disclosure of full Social Security to garnishee if needed to identify the debtor, protects garnishee from liability for mistakes when relying on the last four digits of the Social Security number, applies to documents recorded after effective date, declares emergency effective on passage. There's no amendment on this bill.
All right, thank you. And Mr. Wade?
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, again, Patrick Wade here on behalf of the Oregon State Bar, on behalf of Senate Bill 240. This bill is designed to correct some problems of inconsistency with statutes having to do with the privacy issues which have been passed over the last few years and the creation of judgment liens and information provided in writs of garnishment. As noted, the in order to create a judgment lien, the judgment must contain certain information specified by statute, including the name of the debtor, the full Social Security number of the debtor if known, and the full driver's license number of the debtor if known. On the other hand, privacy concerns in other statutes have required that personal information such as that be truncated. This bill is designed to ensure that those privacy issues are carried over into the judgment and garnishment area by restricting the dissemination of full Social Security numbers and driver's license numbers to allow the use of truncated numbers for those purposes.
Yeah, so, Mr. Wade, basically what we're trying to do is some house cleaning to make certain those individuals that are going to be listed in judgment can't be identified for potential identity theft or other type of ill will.
Yes, Mr. Chair, that is the goal.
All right. Any questions?
Well, this hasn't been done
sooner. Just the same question, Mr. Chair. Once again, this has an emergency clause on it, and I'm sure you're aware that the emergency clauses really limit the citizens' ability to review and challenge these things. So I was wondering if why we're having an emergency clause on all these bills.
Yes, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, all these bills are presented with the emergency clause for the express purpose of making sure that these remedies get into effect as soon as we can to protect those goals for consistency and privacy concerns.
All right, thank you. Any other questions? Is there anyone else who wanted to give testimony today on Senate Bill 240? Not seeing anyone rushing up, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 240, and we'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 239. Council?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 239 requires trustee to record affidavits of mailing and service given to grantor required in a foreclosure. Adds a time limit for grantor to assert that notice was not given. Declares an emergency effective on passage. There is an amendment expected on this bill.
All right, great. Thank you. And is it Blackledge? Mr. Blackledge, thank you for being here. And Mr. Wade, I wanted to thank you for coming up from Eugene to give us your testimony today. Mr. Blackledge, why don't you give us your testimony with the understanding that we'll read your written testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Gary Blackledge. I'm an attorney practicing in Portland, and I'm here representing the Oregon State Bar Debtor-Creditor Legislative Committee to testify in support of Senate Bill 239. In the 2008 legislative session, the legislature passed House Bill 3630, which in a non-judicial trustee foreclosure requires the trustee to give an additional notice to residential holders of, or the grantors of residential trust deeds. And it's important to know that under the statute, the definition of a residential trust deed is a trust deed that consists of 1 to 4 residential units, one of which is occupied by the grantor of the trust deed, his spouse or child, at the time the foreclosure is commenced. And so these people are entitled to this notice. What House Bill 3630 did not do in 2008 was to include any provision for proof of the mailing of that notice to these grantors. What Senate Bill 39 will do is two things. The first thing is it will require the trustee to record an affidavit in the real property records confirming that they have given this notice, so that title companies and third parties looking at the record will know that this notice was mailed. Currently, under the Trust Deed Act, the trustee files a similar affidavit showing that they mailed the trustee's notice of sale, that they published, and all the other things they're required to do under the Trust Deed Act, so that title companies and third parties can see that the act has been complied with. So Senate Bill 239, the first thing it would do would be to require this affidavit to be recorded. One of the other things that House Bill 3630 did was, if the notice was not sent to the grantor of the trust deed, and the grantor didn't have actual notice, it gives this grantor the right of an omitted creditor in a non-judicial foreclosure, which means that their interest survives the foreclosure, which then, if the notice wasn't given, the purchaser at the sale would have to file a judicial action to give this purchaser a chance to step up and pay the loan off in order to keep the house. That's called a strict foreclosure. What House Bill 3630 did was, it didn't put any limitation on that. If the grantor does not continue to occupy or doesn't contest that they didn't get the notice, but there's no evidence that the notice was sent, this would basically be what would amount to a perpetual cloud on the title, that the only way it could be fixed would be by a judicial action. And so what the second thing that House Bill 239 does is, it limits that grantor's right as an omitted creditor to 60 days after the purchaser takes possession. That the grantor has to raise this issue by sending a notice to either the purchaser, the trustee, the lender, or the servicer of the loan that says, hey, I didn't get this notice that I was required to get. The reason why we're looking at, and I might add, too, on the third page of my written testimony is an amendment that we have worked out with the consumer advocates who were responsible for preparing and passing House Bill 3630, that extends it to 60 days after the purchaser takes possession. In these situations, 99% of the time, the grantor is going to be the occupant of the residence. And so when the purchaser comes on the 10th day after the sale to say, hi, I bought this place, you need to move, they're going to know about this situation and be able to go get advice and find out, oh, did you get this notice? No, I didn't get this notice. So then they can raise this issue. And so we believe that 60 days is a reasonable period of time after the purchaser is either facing an eviction or something to raise this issue and have it brought to a head. In all other cases, though, where the purchaser or the grantor who has been foreclosed just throws up his hands and walks away, or maybe has already vacated, and it doesn't appear that the notice was sent after 60 days' time has elapsed, then this omitted creditor status will
disappear and no longer cloud the title of the properties, so that no judicial action will be necessary in situations where the grantor isn't contesting that they didn't get the notice. So those are the two things that this bill does. We urge you to pass this bill with the amendment, and I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
All right. Any questions?
Very brief. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Since you worked on the law.
thank you, Mr. Blackledge. I just want to make sure that Chris Ambrose was consulted on this. He spent a lot of time in the work group. He represents the mortgage brokers or mortgage lenders, and he is primarily responsible for drafting 3630. And so when you said you'd consulted with the proponents, I just want to make sure that he had an opportunity to participate.
I don't recall in the discussions. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Bonamici. I don't recall that Chris Ambrose was on the group that we met with, but Keith Carnes and trying to think of his name, begins with an L, but he was on the committee. Anyway.
Well, we're going to have some more time, so we can follow up on that.
Thank you.
Is there any other questions? All right. With that, thank you very much. Let me ask if there's anyone else that wanted to give testimony today on Senate Bill 239. If not, Ms. Blackledge, thank you very much for your time, and thank you for coming to the Capitol today to give us the presentation. I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on Senate Bill 239. And Mr. Comstock, your testimony has already been handed in on the other bill. Thank you very much for providing us with that. At this point, we're going to go ahead and close for today. My understanding is we're set for tomorrow morning at 8:30.
Yes, Mr. Chair, 8:30. And I'd like to mention that Thursday we'll be meeting at 8 for the Tort Claims Act.
Yeah, 8 o'clock is going to take a little bit more time. Thursday's going to take a little more time, so we're going to try to get a little earlier start. So with that said, we'll conclude our work for today, and we'll be here tomorrow morning. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you all. Thanks.